Welcome. First of all, I want to wish everyone a happy and healthy new year. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I want to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, that we started on Christmas Eve, actually, about these two remarkable grandmothers, both of whom lived to be 104 years old, and actually their grandson was the same, so it was his two grandmothers. And they're very different, so we're exploring what they did and what their lives entailed to enable them to live so long. And there's a sidebar article before I go on entitled Learning Resilience, It's Never Too Late to Start. Resilience isn't merely survival. It's about adapting and even flourishing when life throws its hardest punches. Science shows we can build this capacity at any age. Even in their 70s and 80s, people can strengthen their mental fortitude through deliberate action, researchers say. One study found that participating in community activities and other structured programs that promote engagement like volunteering can foster a sense of purpose and responsibility, while also reducing worry and increasing mental stability. While we can't completely rewrite our basic nature, an introvert won't suddenly become the life of the party, meaning full change is absolutely possible, explains gerontologist Peter Martin. It's like building a muscle you didn't know you had. Longevity researcher Nir Brazali points to the power of stress toughening, not through major life crises, but through chosen challenges that stretch our capabilities. Think of an older person deciding to learn watercolor painting despite his trembling hands, and what that teaches him about patience and stick-to-itiveness. Now, when bigger problems come along, he remembers, I can adapt. Such experiences build up what Brazili calls resilience reserves, resources we can draw upon when facing life's inevitable storms. This growth ripples outward. When grandchildren watch their grandmother master a smartphone or hear stories of how she navigated career or life setbacks decades ago, they absorb living lessons in perseverance. By practicing resilience and modeling it, we're creating a legacy of adaptability and courage that enriches both ourselves and future generations. So now we were talking about what makes an older person live longer or not, and the philosophy, current philosophy behind all that. Quackery is quackery, so buyer beware. This is referring to supplements. Every year, someone is selling something new to reverse aging, and trust me, it's almost all based on junk science, says Thomas Pearls, director of Boston University's New England Centenarian Study, which has been tracking the lives of older people since 1995. If an anti-aging remedy doesn't show up in the standard medical literature with a clinical trial showing its benefits, stay as far away from it as you possibly can. Still, much research remains uncontestable. While we know people who quit smoking or never smoked have a lower risk of dying prematurely than those who smoke, study after study highlights the benefits of quality sleep. 7 to 8 hours a night remains the standard for both cognitive health and disease control. As for the benefits of reducing risk and nurturing relationships, neither of my grandmothers was a daredevil, and both enjoyed long, stable marriages that kept them safe and anchored. Even so, if I made a checklist of healthy aging habits, Charlotte and Ruth would score somewhere in the do-as-I-say-not-as-I-do range, neither was letter perfect in her long journey. But who is, especially over the course of an extended life? The oldest person Pearls ever met was Sarah Naus, one of his study participants. Born in 1880 in Pennsylvania coal country, Naus lived independently until her failing eyesight and frailty led her to a nursing home at the age of 111. She remained cognitively sharp and disease-free, even while enjoying a life that defied all expectation. She loved sweets, like chocolate cake, and hated green vegetables. Pearls recalls, but none of that mattered. Naus lived to 119, making her the third oldest verified person in history. Living as long as she did, or even my grandmother's, did not happen with shortcuts or simple solutions. But emerging science reveals practical, evidence-backed steps we can all take to add healthy, productive years to our lives. The amazing thing is, a significant portion of Americans now have the opportunity to get into their late 90s and 100s, Pearls says. With healthier habits and new ways to delay age-related disease and disability, it's much more the situation of the older you get, the healthier you've been. Now let's look at the new secrets of aging. When my grandmothers were younger women in the 1950s, living to 100 was rare. Only about 2,300 Americans reached that milestone each year. Grandma Charlotte and Grandma Ruth lived to see that change dramatically. Last year, more than 101,000 Americans celebrated their 100th birthday. And by 2054, that number is expected to soar to around 442,000. This shift is part of a broader wave. Right now, 62 million Americans, 18% of us, are 65 and older. By 2054, that group will grow to 84 million, almost a quarter of the population. But here's what's fascinating. While more of us are living longer than ever, the reasons aren't quite what you might expect. Scientists studying long-lived persons have discovered surprising factors that go beyond the usual advice. These three hidden keys tell us something deeper about how humans thrive in their later years. Resilience. New research shows that mentally tough people tend to live longer, especially women. Looking at more than 10,000 older Americans, scientists last year found that those with high resilience, who stay calm under pressure, keep going when things get hard, and feel their life has purpose, were half as likely to die over a 10-year period as less resilient people. Think about that. While there might be other factors at play, the findings suggest that building mental toughness may be as important for a long life as physical health. Longevity researcher Barzilai's uncle, who died at 102, lived through challenges most of us can hardly fathom. A Holocaust survivor, he endured 5 concentration camps, subsisting on the barest of rations and sheer willpower. There wasn't enough food, but at least the Germans paid for everything, he would joke for decades afterwards. Barzilai believes these trials weren't merely hardships his uncle survived. They might have actually helped him live longer. In biology, the concept is called hormesis, or, as you might know it, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. A bit of wisdom that may have started with 19th century German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. You have to go through stress in order to increase your capacity to deal with greater stressors later on. The principle is similar to the way intense exercise creates temporary inflammation that ultimately strengthens muscles and builds endurance. In aging, hormesis suggests that surviving difficult situations like war or great loss can prepare the body for other challenges. The body adapts to stress by strengthening its defenses, Barzilai says, describing it as a kind of biological toughening up, often called the selective survivor effect. This effect might help explain why some groups known for enduring systemic adversity like Holocaust survivors, World War II veterans, and older Black Americans often exhibit remarkable resilience and longevity, despite hardships that should, by all accounts, have worn them down. They developed an extraordinary ability to push forward. My grandma Charlotte was the embodiment of the select survivor. She lost 7 siblings in the Holocaust, an unimaginable trauma she never talked about. It must have given her deep scars and steel-like strength. Getting through life's darkest moments had forged in her a resilience that no ordinary hardship could break. Next, we have love. If Grandma Charlotte's survivor spirit carried her through life's challenges, it was love that fueled Grandma Ruth's remarkable journey. After more than 60 years in a devoted marriage with my grandfather, she found new joy and companionship after his passing. At 87, she met Herman, a retired chemist, and together they shared 5 blissful years, holding hands, walking on the beach, and even arriving late to my wedding because they were reading poetry to each other in their hotel room. No geriatrician can write a prescription for a passionate affair, but love remains an often overlooked cornerstone of healthy aging. Strong social connections are linked to a 50% greater chance of living longer. The bond between you and the people around you might be the ultimate key to aging well. The renowned Harvard study of adult development, now in its 86th year, has tracked the lives of hundreds of individuals over decades. Its most striking conclusion? The single strongest predictor of healthy aging isn't wealth, social status, or even lifestyle. It's the quality of your relationships. Or, as former study director George Valiant put it, happiness is love. Full stop. Marital satisfaction in particular seems to act like a longevity booster shot. Among people in their 80s, those in happy marriages reported that their moods stayed steady, even on days when they were in more physical pain. The study also showed that people in warm, supportive relationships tended to live longer and happier lives than loners. In fact, loneliness as we age can be as damaging to health as smoking or alcoholism. Meanwhile, people with a strong social support experience less mental decline as they aged and were less likely to overindulge in smoking or drinking. And the benefits of healthy relationships aren't just emotional. They're cognitive, too. A recent finding of the study showed that women who felt securely attached to their partners were less likely to be depressed, reported greater happiness in their relationships. They even perform better on memory tests 2.5 years later than those with weaker ties to loved ones. These findings tracked with Grandma Ruth and her decades of loving partnerships. But what about Grandma Charlotte, whom I mostly remember bickering with my grandfather all day? It turns out good relationships don't have to be perfect or look perfect to outsiders. Some of the couples in the Harvard study, well into their 80s, argued daily, but as long as they felt they could rely on each other when it was truly mattering, those everyday spats didn't seem to harm their mental health and memory. Now, as this article is quite lengthy, we're going to save the next part, which is faith, until next time. And since we're starting talking about healthy agency, I have a little booklet that I got from Smithsonian. And the title of it is Brain Matters, and I'm going to read a couple of articles from it for you today. Today we associate music with emotion and artistry. It's used in medical therapy and activates the same region of the brain as complex mathematical formulas. This largely positive image has strong roots in history as well. But with the opponents come the naysayers. Writing for Brain Decoder, Kate Bagley delves into the long history of music's complicated relationship with medicine in the United States and Europe. Bagley points to a new paper reviewing music's reputation as a disease by James Kinaway, a historian at Newcastle University. Until the 1600s and 1700s, music had a pretty positive image, linked with a sort of universal harmony and health. But as scientists learned about the auditory nerves in the brain, some physicians perceived music as a threat and an overstimulant. According to a subset of medical scholars, listening to too much music could be dangerous, inducing headaches and perhaps even death. By the time the 1800s rolled around, music was a full-blown pathogen, according to medicine, literature, and etiquette books. Excessive music, whether in audience or performance, was associated by some researchers with moral degradation and depravity. When American neurologist George Beard coined nervous exhaustion as a mental condition called neuroasthenia, he cited music as a cause of the illness. Women, of course, were continually linked to the dangers of music. In the 17th and 18th century, physicians thought the fairer sex had weak nerves and were prone to fainting. They warned that excessive keyboard playing could aggravate such issues. Gynecologists thought music might be too sexy for women or that it could lead to heavy menstrual cycles. On the flip side, others linked it to infertility and reproductive problems. Victorian researchers also thought that musical talent might be more prevalent among homosexuals. Musical pathology continued into the 20th century. Political parties, the Third Reich in Germany and the Soviets in Russia specifically, capitalized on the negative undertones put forth by medicine and targeted specific genres to bolster their causes. In the U.S., listening to too much jazz came with social and moral symptoms. Even today, psychologists have linked music to addiction and mused on how it might affect the psyche. Needless to say, neuroscience and psychology have come a long way. Scientists now know a lot more about the brain, how the brain processes music. While listening to music at a high volume for a long period of time can be psychologically straining as well as damaging to the eardrum, it's not the music itself that does the damage, it's the decibel levels. Whatever you might think about the dregs of pop music today, listening to Taylor Swift probably won't kill you. Now, from the same source, a quick summary of things that we've read about before, but it won't hurt to remind us at this end of the year and the beginning of next year. 10 ways you can boost your brain power starting now. 1. Use it or lose it. 2. Break a sweat. 3. Fuel up with brain foods. 4. Get enough sleep. 5. Keep stress at bay. 6. See your doctor regularly. 7. Spend time with friends. 8. Read more fiction. 9. Don't abuse your brain. And 10. Take time off the internet. Well, here's an interesting article in AARP, the magazine, under the heading of Healthy You. The four pillars of safer exercise. Bad form can undercut your workout and increase your chances of injury. To minimize risk and maximize results, follow these guidelines from Mike Mancias, chief human performer advisor to LeBron James and author of Game Plan. This article is by Myatt Murphy. Don't move your neck. Whenever you turn your head to look any place but forward, it can misalign your neck and overstress its muscles. Tilting your chin downward to look at your feet, for example, can also compromise your breathing. Protect yourself. Aim your gaze on a spot in the distance that's slightly above eye level and keep it there, since your head will often follow where your eyes look. Or try this trick. Imagine there's a string attached to the top of your head, pulling it upward, and an egg underneath your chin that will break if you look down. Don't move your feet. The more anchored you are to the floor, the more force you're able to generate when lifting weights. Protect yourself. Space your feet either hip width or shoulder width apart, whichever is more comfortable, and distribute your body weight evenly on both feet. No leaning. In most cases, your feet will stay flat on the floor from your toes to your heels. Don't move your wrists. Letting your wrist bend too far forward or backward when lifting weights can stress the ligaments and tendons in your hands and wrists. That can raise your risk of injury and prevent you from lifting the full amount of weight your muscles are capable of handling. Protect yourself. Place your wrists in a neutral position to form a straight line from your knuckles through your forearms. Use a firm grip, like you're grabbing a steering wheel, but don't squeeze too tightly. That will tucker out your hands and forearms. And don't move your spine. Bad posture puts you at risk for a lower back injury. It can also compress your diaphragm, tiring you out faster. Protect yourself. Pull your belly button in toward your spine, then gently tighten your core muscles and keep them that way as you exercise. And obviously this has to do with lifting weights of various kinds, between grocery bags and actual weights. Now, how about a fun look at Jimmy Fallon? The Tonight Show host grooves on his old soul, golf, and the stuff grandpas do. Old soul and a young body. My mom's parents, Grandpa Tom and Grandma Gloria, lived in our backyard in Sagerties, New York, in a little cottage. My grandfather and I used to go to the VFW a lot, so I hung out with a bunch of 70-year-old guys when I was growing up. I'm kind of an old soul from that. Laugh it up. My dad's dad, Jim, was very funny. He and my parents loved to throw parties. Everyone would get up and do a bit, sing a song or tell a joke. My parents would pay me 50 cents to do Rodney Dangerfield. I was probably 8 or 9. I would put on a tie. My wife's cooking is so bad, I mean, since when does toast have bones? Or I would do a Saturday Night Live sketch with my sister, dressed up in my parents' disco-y clothes from the 70s. We are too wild and crazy. Nature can be dangerous. My parents were overprotective, maybe because Grandpa Tom was a cop. I got a tent once from a garage sale, and I put it up in my backyard, and my mom came out in the middle of the night and said, "Get back inside. There's a raccoon, maybe, out here. Keep your hair combed." Grandpa Tom didn't like my messy, spiky hair. He asked, "Will you comb it? Like a nice part to the side?" But he loved my stand-up. He liked that I didn't curse. He was there for a bunch of gigs where I bombed, and he would say, "Stick with it. Golf is for life." In our garden, one of our tomato plants had a big thing at the end of it, holding it up. "What is that?" I asked Grandpa Tom. "That's a golf club. You should learn this. This is a good investment because you can play this for the rest of your life," which I still do. Meet the in-laws. The night before my parents are meeting my wife's parents, my mom calls, "Daddy's front tooth fell out. The dentist is on vacation. We have a plan. He's not going to smile." One more thing. I rubbed my eye in my sleep. I got a bloodshot eye. This is going to be your new in-laws, a jack-o'-lantern and a pirate. It still worked out. I got married. I got the music in me. My dad was in Vietnam in the Navy, and he used to play reel-to-reel tapes of him singing doo-wop. So I always assumed that doo-wop music was around in the 1969s. But then I'm watching movies like Platoon, and I'm like, "Where's the doo-wop?" It turns out it was already retro by the time Vietnam came. My dad was just a little too late to the game. Keep trying new things. I kind of started my picture book series, Dada, Mama, Baby, Nana, as a joke. For my latest, I thought, what would be funny about Grandpa? Well, Papa doesn't do anything. It's pretty funny because I think 10 out of 10 moms would say that Grandpa doesn't do anything. But as you read it, you realize all the stuff grandpas actually do. This article was as told to Gail Jo Carter. Comedian Jimmy Fallon, 50, is the creator, executive producer, and host of NBC's upcoming unscripted reality competition show, On Brand. The Tonight Show, starring Jimmy Fallon, airs weeknights at 11:35 Eastern Standard Time on NBC. Well, we have just a few minutes left in this, our last broadcast of this year, and I'll certainly be back next week and next year. I'm going to give you some more helpful hints on saving money, little short things. These are utilities and energy. Turn down your water temperature, dialing back your hot water heater's thermostat from 140 degrees to 120 degrees could save you more than $400 a year, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Plus, the lower temperature can extend the life of your pipes, slowing sediment buildup and corrosion. Unplug your toaster and your coffee maker, computer, and sound system when not in use. Such appliances use vampire energy, or standby power, which comprises up to 10% of your home's energy use, even when they're turned off. If you have several culprits in one room, consider plugging them into a power strip to turn them off all at once. Clean your dryer vents. In addition to regularly cleaning out your lint filter, clearing debris from your dryer vent can help the machine run more efficiently and reduce the risk of future maintenance issues, according to Courtney Klosterman, Home Insights expert at Hippo Home Insurance. You can do it yourself, or you can hire a pro for about $150. Benefit from local tax incentives. Many states, cities, municipalities, and local utility providers are still giving credits and rebates for energy-efficient upgrades. Research your local incentives before you renovate, update systems such as your HVAC, or do major electrical work. For example, in some areas, incentives may make a heat pump more financially attractive than a traditional air conditioning system. Well, folks, I've once again run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I do hope you've enjoyed listening, and please join me next time. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.